You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts his money where his fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. Let's do this thing. We've got a ton of stuff to get to on the program. We're shaking things up once again. Howard Bender bats a leadoff. We'll get to some Major League Baseball DFS. We've already got some baseball games going on as we speak right now, and the ball is flying out of the parks, man. We're early into the afternoon, and we're already into the overs. Anyone to bet the overs with the Grand Salami today, you guys are off to a great start. I see a couple of spots on the board tonight for fantasy purposes where there should be a lot of runs put up on the board, a lot of fantasy points put up. Howard Bender, one of the best in the business, will join us and break it down. Speaking of the best in the business, Floyd Mayweather, the best there is, the best there was, the best there ever will be, or is that Bret Hart? Either way, Floyd Mayweather is taking on Conor McGregor, somebody who, to his own mind, thinks he's the greatest of all time. The fight is on. We'll get to that in a couple of moments. We're going to break it down. There's also a UFC card this week that's completely being overshadowed by the announcement of Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather. I almost want to combine, like, the two of them. like Larry Merchant. What's that guy's name? Conor... you know, McGregor, Conor, he had no idea. All he knows that, hey, it's a lot of money on the table. And there is a lot of money on the table. We're now 1 week away from the NBA draft. But we're also a couple of minutes away from us starting to talk NFL football on the program on a daily basis. I say this every year. We're going to hit every team. And normally we hit a few teams and, you know, we run out of time and stuff. It's, listen, there's only 20 shows in a month. Five shows a week, 20 shows in a month. So it would actually take us like a month and a half to get to all 32 teams. So we better start today, and we're going to go in a predictive order of how I think the divisions are going to play out. Now, I'm not telling you who I think is going to win the Super Bowl right now. I don't know who's going to win the Super Bowl right now. And it's even hard to give regular season win totals right now when we're not even in the camp yet, man. Players get hurt, right? You know, let's watch some preseason football. You know, stuff changes. I'm a type of guy, man, even on NFL regular Sundays, I don't place my bets to like 101 type of deal. I sit there last second. You never know what's going to happen. But that doesn't mean that we can't kick the tires on this stuff and at least look at the season win totals. How are we going to approach this? And are there any early season angles? So we're going to start off with the AFC East on the program today, and we'll work our way down. And since we're doing this in a predictive order, we're talking about the New England Patriots today. Yeah, great. Fun. Yay. What do you say about the Patriots? They're good. Next. I think, you know, I think the that segment might be like 90 seconds. Well, New England Patriots, a lot of drama. They've won 13 of the last 14 division titles. In fact, you know, they've set all kinds of records, but we'll get to that in a couple of moments' time. But it's go time as the much-discussed super fight between the UFC phenom Conor McGregor and the undefeated Floyd Mayweather is officially on. It's real. August the 26th in Las Vegas, Nevada at the T-Mobile Arena. Now, first things first, I've got to admit that I was wrong. I didn't think this fight was ever going to happen. I thought Floyd Mayweather had too much dignity to bring himself down to Conor McGregor's level, but let's be real. You know, I've lost my dignity for a hell of a lot less than $300 million in a night, all right? Like, dignity? What? You know, forget about, like, that D word. You know, there's no dignity. The other D word is dumb, all right? Because you're dumb if you don't do it, I guess. Like, seriously. If, you know, if there's going to be $400 or $500 million on the table to be split up and Floyd's going to get most of it, why the hell wouldn't he do it? But one of the main reasons why I thought this fight would never happen is because Floyd Mayweather doesn't like Dana White. And Dana White's always used Floyd Mayweather as a trolling measure to get attention for the UFC over the years. That's why I thought it's not going to happen. Floyd's just going to troll them and then he'll back out at the last second. And I don't think it would have happened on the track that they were going. As the reports are, that Dana White had nothing to do in the negotiations in the end. It was going nowhere fast. They realized this, and they brought in the big boys. Ari Emanuel, the new owner of the UFC, reached out to Lorenzo Fertitta. At least that's the behind-the-scenes word, because Fertitta owns a bunch of casinos in Vegas. He's not much as much of a hothead as Dana White is. Now, listen, Dana's still getting his piece. It's all good. But what's really interesting about this, and I never imagined this to happen, Conor McGregor is their superstar. And it's amazing to me that we've come full circle. I remember talking to Dana White about 12 years ago on a radio show, and he said, you know, the reason why we're better than boxing is because we're not boxing. And now, here is the UFC. Their biggest deal of the year is selling out to Showtime and Floyd Mayweather. There's not a single UFC logo on the poster. Like, the UFC has nothing to do with this. This is a pure boxing event promoted by Showtime and Floyd Mayweather. It's a boxing event. It's a boxing undercard. You know, it's funny because I was looking for the odds today, and I'm like, where is it? Oh, yeah, it's not under MMA or UFC. It's under boxing. It's a clear-cut boxing event. Now, it is going to be fought at 154 pounds, and a lot of people are thinking, ooh, now Conor's got a shot. I don't give a crap. It's 164 pounds. He has no shot. It's like some jackass that shaves his legs and wears those tight spandex shorts and rides his bike all the time thinking he can beat Lance Armstrong. Let's not remember. And it's, you know, even me, man, I've got sucked into the hype a little bit, but let's not remember. This is a sham. It's a cash grab. It's a ripoff. And let me also warn you. Listen, Floyd Mayweather can win this fight in 10 seconds if he wants to. They can sound the bell. He could come out and just ambush McGregor. And McGregor's never going to be seen anything like the speed that Mayweather's going to bring. He's going to end it right away. So he can name it. Like, I don't know when he's going to end this thing. But what I do know, and as somebody that lived in Las Vegas, and as somebody who was there, not at the fight, but I was in Vegas, and I got burnt the night that Bradley fought Pacquiao. They already had the posters for the rematch made, man. All right? Anytime you get this much money on the table, shady stuff is going to happen. And listen, I'm not saying that Floyd Mayweather is going to take a dive. I don't think Floyd Mayweather wants to lose this fight. But, you know, maybe an accidental headbutt, maybe a little strange DQ, and they got to do it again all over again, and you got to pay for it all over again. You know, there's a lot of money at stake, guys. And since this is boxing and it's not MMA, let's be real about the corruption in this. It's not like nothing shady's ever happened in boxing. It's like, yeah, no one's ever been shot in the city before. Like, yeah, let's be real, people. I think you'd be naive or stupid if you're not a little bit weary of this. Otherwise, this is a type of deal where you rack up. And listen, I'm going to give you some good advice here. It's very responsible. I want you to call every bookie that you know and rack up as much credit as you possibly can and put it all on Floyd Mayweather. It's one of these deals. Listen, it's a 73-day, 10% investment. But, the Irishman, these guys would bet Conor McGregor if he fought Cain Velasquez. Remember the Saturday Night Live skit, the Bears? So what do you think? Ditka versus the Pope and Jesus Christ. Ditka and a close one. Basically, you can tell these guys in Ireland right now, listen, Conor McGregor's fighting Iron Man. Not Robert Downey Jr., but the actual real Iron Man. They got a real Iron Man. And I think Conor could take him. Listen, the line was 1,100. It's already 900, less than 24 hours later. I want you guys to keep on pounding back that Guinness, man. I want you to watch every preview show because the only hits that Conor are going to land are going to be his creative one-liners, and he's going to sell the hell out of this thing. And then he's going to get dominated and lose, and we're all going to feel ripped off. And I'll tell you what, no matter what happens Saturday night, August the 26th, it doesn't matter, man. Conor McGregor's already the greatest of all time for talking his way into this sham. Game Time Decisions on a Fantasy Sports Network continues. Game Time Decisions on a Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. We are live. You know we're live because no show would make as many mistakes as I do, right? But nevertheless, there's no mistakes to be made when you talk baseball with Howard Bender. We got John Pollock joining us. We got a New England Patriots preview. We got a lot of cool stuff to get to on the program. Let's bring in the VP of Operations for Fantasy Alarm, host of Fantasy Alarm on SiriusXM Fantasy Sports Radio, Monday to Friday, 4 until 6 o'clock. Howard Bender, what's going on, Howard?
What do you say, Gabe? Thanks for having me back. I thought maybe I offended you or something.
No, Ashley complains that I steal you or something. I don't know. She I think she has a thing for you, man. She gets really jealous anytime I have you on.
Well, then she's definitely playing some super hard to get because I haven't heard from her in ages either.
Yeah, she's you know, we're not going to get an Ashley Dockings situation. We don't have enough time. Anyways, all kidding aside, always a pleasure, man. Thanks for joining us. So we got seven games on the slate tonight. There's some baseball going on as we speak right now, and you know, we're getting to that time of the year right now when the ball's starting to jump, the ball's starting to fly. Some people think the ball is that the ball is wrapped tight, that the ball is juiced. Either way, man, balls are flying out of the ballpark this year.
I mean, listen, we see this on a regular basis. When the weather starts to turn, we start going from, you know, the cold, rainy spring to a nice, warm summer. And, you know, listen, I'm not going to get into a political debate with anybody, but maybe global warming has brought this home run surge a little bit early this year.
I like that. No one's brought this in. Everyone has different reasons for it. I like that. Global warming. The issue. You got to think of everything in capping, right?
Why not?
Yeah, you got to put. Think of all angles. Okay, so highest total of the night tonight is the Giants and the Rockies. What I find intriguing about this game is it's kind of interesting in that, you know, it's the highest total of the night, but we also have a pitcher that I don't think is going to be. I don't know. Is he going to be heavily owned? And I'm talking about Jeff Hoffman tonight. And Hoff has been red hot, man. He's won his last three starts all on the road, 34 strikeouts. So he walked three batters during this run. His whip is, 0.74 right now. And then conversely, you got Matt Moore, who's just bad. Doesn't matter whether he's at home or he's on the road. But it's even worse when he's on the road, man. You know, 0-4 with a 7.94 earned run average. And we'll get into some of the numbers of the Rockies' bats against Moore, but they've hit him hard before. So I look at Hoffman. Somebody that can get the win, somebody in fine form, but at Coors, part of the highest total. What's your take?
Well, that's the thing, is that I love Hoffman as a pitcher. You know, you look at this kid's strikeout rate, and it's absolutely fantastic. His wOBA splits are super tasty right now. There's so much to love about him. The only problem is that he's not a ground ball pitcher. If he were a ground ball pitcher, I'd be all over him tonight as a nice little GPP sort of contrarian play because I know everybody kind of avoids pitching in Coors Field. But the fact that he's a fly ball pitcher, and I mean, it's like a 40-some-odd percent fly ball rate there that as bad as these Giants bats have been, and these Giants bats have been absolutely atrocious, if they can just, you know, loft the ball a little bit on him, I think he's going to get into some trouble there. I think you'll probably end up with something in the neighborhood of like 5 to 6 innings from him. Maybe gives up 4 or 5 runs and comes away with half a dozen K.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. You have to hold your breath every time there's a fly ball tonight in this situation. But conversely, Colorado are going to put up a lot of runs tonight, or we should expect them to. I will say this. I'm always hesitant of teams when after a road trip. That first game back, Howard, I don't know what it is, man. You know, they get back. I don't know if it's like they get home and, you know, they relax. They get home. They're tired. They don't recalibrate. Oftentimes, teams will lose and struggle the first game back after a road trip. But let's look at some of the numbers of the Rockies against Moore and the Rockies in general. Trevor Story was a big story last year. He's been a disappointment so far this year, but RBIs in 3 straight games, Howard, and I tell you what, he's murdered the Giants this year. 3 home runs, 9 RBIs, and 6 runs scored already against the Giants.
Well, the way I see it is that the Giants have getting, you know, with the poor play, really low ratings right now, so they figured, okay, for Colorado's first game back, let's get it off with a bang, and we'll start Matt Moore, who's just an absolute dumpster fire, complete gas can. And it doesn't matter if it's same-handed hitting or if it's righty on lefty crime here. The bottom line is that I love all of these Rockies bats. I mean, you're basically doing one of two things tonight. You're either building all around Coors or you're building all around Chris Sale. But I think that, you know, legitimately, and even a guy like Cargo, who's on an 0-for-20 string right now and got the night off against Chad Kuhl, which, you know, I mean, come on, it's Chad Kuhl. You know, I think that everybody's in play here. I think certain guys like Cargo might go a little, low-owned.
So I wanted to ask you, so yeah, he's on an 0-for-24 run now, I think. So people are going to hesitate away, but at some point, you've got to be a man and sort of jump off the ledge, don't you, and say, well, he ain't going 0 for 38, right? Like, you almost have to step in. Some people take the adage that, you know, I'll wait till he gets hot again and I'll jump back on a bandwagon. How do you approach that when a player is ice cold like this?
I look at it, you know, from a daily fantasy standpoint, I look at it as, like, now is the time to do it. Matt Moore's got, like, a 490 WOBA against him from left-handed hitting. I think that there's no doubt in my mind that Cargo can take him deep. And because of that, because of the 0 for 24 right now, I think he's going to be incredibly low-owned. So in a GPP, if I can get him at, you know, like a sub 10% ownership rate here in Coors Field, I think that's definitely the play. As far as, like, from a seasonal standpoint, you got to keep him in the lineup when it's a home stand right there. Yeah, I understand you want to sit him on the road, fine, but at home, you got to do it.
All right, Arenado 7-14 in his career against Moore. LeMahieu is 5 for 11 in his career. Charlie Blackmon 3 for 11 with a home run and four RBIs, as you stated. So it's like a buffet. It's like you and Cam at the buffet. You guys like everything. It's like, take your pick with these guys today, huh?
Oh, absolutely, man. All you can eat. I've been here 4 hours, and I'm happy about it. Hell, I'll even use that Tapia kid if he's playing in the lineup today. There's nobody out of play when you got Matt Moore on the hill.
All right, so you mentioned the Red Sox and the Phillies. Chris Sale, obviously, is going to be the guy tonight. Red Sox are heating up right now. I think they've won, 15 of the last 22, 16 of the last 23 or so. The bats are starting to come alive. Benintendi's on a run right now. 8 for 8, home run, 7 RBIs in the last 4 games. Mitch Moreland, 8 RBIs and 8 runs scored, man, in the last 8 games. A lot of production coming from the Red Sox right now, and not even the bigger name type guys.
No, I mean, they've been seeing a lot of, I'd say, relatively weak right-handed pitching lately, which has put Benintendi and Moreland at the top of their game right now. Jackie Bradley, he's another one who over the last 2 weeks has obviously been surging as well. You got Nick Pivetta on the hill for the Phillies tonight. Struggles more. If you look at his numbers, he struggles more against right-handed batters there. But, I mean, you're still looking at like a 380 WOBA from left-handed hitters against him. Again, just like the Rockies with Matt Moore, I think everybody from the Red Sox lineup is in play here. It's just a matter of which bats you're going to be able to fit in, depending on who you're using on the hill.
I've noticed a little bit of a trend right now. Pretty much everybody's in play. It's crazy. We focused, I'm talking from a standing standpoint, Howard. You know, we sort of focused on, oh, Houston's running away with it, Washington's sort of running away with it. But if you look, I was looking at the American League. There's 12 teams within 6 games of the wild card. So, you know, everybody's in play right now. And, you know, you look at the Pittsburgh Pirates. Pirates been playing better baseball as of late. Kansas City Royals. Royals keep going on these little mini streaks, and then they stumble again. I'm waiting for them, you know, to see if they can go on a real streak here. But they've won 4 in a row right now. And we talk about, you know, how hot Hoffman is. Let's talk about a cold pitcher in Ricky Nolasco right now, Bender. You know, we want to talk about a gas can. The guy hasn't won in 9 starts. He's lost 5 straight decisions. He hasn't won in like 9 straight starts.
Yeah, he's atrocious. Listen, there are certain pitchers out there who I just don't understand how they still have a big league job. I mean, are we really at that point right now where we have to give guys like Nolasco a continued shot? This guy has been bad forever. He was bad when he was with the Marlins. He's bad with the Angels. You know, listen, if you want to say that the sun shines on a dog's ass at least once, and every once in a while Nolasco puts up a fine start, okay, great. But for the most part there, you know, whether you look at just the deep numbers, whether you look at the surface numbers, the dude's atrocious. And yeah, you know, I'm looking at a number of these Royals. One in particular actually is Lorenzo Cain, who been white hot over the past week. He's got like 4 home runs, 8 RBI. Batting over 300 for the last 2 weeks there, so he's a guy I'm definitely eyeballing tonight when I'm using my when I'm trying to build my lineups.
We should note Sal Perez has killed him, 8 for 21 with a home run versus Nolasco. Moustakas is on a hell of a run right now in the month of June, 5 home runs, hitting .391 right now. I think the Royals get this done tonight too. I think they're going to get the win. Nationals and Mets. I look at this game and I'm just thinking, man, this has train wreck, high scoring written all over it, doesn't it, tonight?
Yeah, you know, Gazelman is he's I think that he's got great talent. I think that there's a good skill set there. He hasn't been able to put it together, and that's, you know, obviously what's been holding him back. You got Gio on the hill for the Nats. And, yeah, you know, listen, Gio against right-handed hitting. I mean, I'm loving Cespedes tonight. I think Cespedes is going to be a guy who's going to start to go off a little bit more. You know, everybody's been focused so heavily on these lefty bats for the Mets with the way that Conforto and Jay Bruce and Neil Walker have been playing. And I think, you know, some of these right-handers like Cespedes, like Wilmer Flores, should definitely get a much better look tonight. But, you know, I'll pick and choose off of this game here. I'm not, you know, I don't really see anybody, you know, that I really want to stack from this game.
You know, I want to ask you, when it comes to the different sports, when it comes to DFS, is baseball the toughest for Joe Public to win?
Oh, yeah.
Seems like, you know, football, everyone sort of knows, right? They know the stats, they know the players. Baseball, you know, you guys dig so freaking deep into this stuff and are aware of every angle. And I'm sure, you know what I mean, you know, DraftKings and FanDuel, they're not paying me, so I don't care. So I'll say this, but it seems like the common guy doesn't have a hope in hell in this stuff, in baseball.
No, I mean, listen, you know, the common guy, it depends on the bankroll. And, you know, this has been the constant thing with DFS right now. You know, you see all these, you know, postings that so-and-so won 10 grand, so-and-so won 100 grand in the past week, you know, blah, blah, blah. These guys who are winning this kind of money, these guys are ponying up $1,000 entry fees, $500 entry fees, $5,300 entrance fees. And they're playing against a field of maybe 100, 120 people there. That's really, that's where you're going to end up making that big money. But I mean, if you're sitting there, if you've got like a normal person's bet, if Joe Everyman's bankroll allows him to play 20, 30 bucks a night, then you know what? Then that's not what's going to do it. You're going to need to build up your bankroll playing cash games because, listen, I mean, you know, you might as well go to the supermarket and buy a bunch of scratchers rather than just put in $3 into the millionaire maker and, you know, and hope that you've somehow hit it against 20 other guys who have 100 other lineups in there.
I like your honesty about that. And to be honest, that's one of the reasons why I like Hot Roster. And I'm not getting commission for anyone either, but I just like the fact that you're playing, you like a guy, you don't have to worry about 182,000 MIT dudes. You don't have to worry about an algorithm guy. You don't have to worry about the Wall Street guys. Like, you don't have to worry. It's like, well, you know what? I like this guy. He did well. Boom. Check mark a win. You're playing against yourself. I like that format.
Yeah, it's definitely it's a better format for the everyman. It really is.
Yeah.
You're not gonna, but you know, I mean, the problem is that everybody's got dollar signs in their eyes and pipe dreams of, you know, sitting on that yacht with you know, Winthrop and Lewis and hoping that they're gonna be, you know, chilling out on an island somewhere. And it doesn't happen like that. So it's tougher for them. That's why I'm using cash games here in baseball right now. And I'm talking like $5, $10, 50-50s that I'm playing. And I'm just building up my bankroll so that come football, when I do feel like it's a little easier from week 4 or 5 on, then I can start entering those bigger money tournaments and start playing against a more reasonable player pool.
Howard Bender, VP of Operations, Fantasy Alarm. You can hear him weekdays, 4 o'clock. On Sirius XM Fantasy Sports Radio. Howard, it's always a pleasure, my man.
Gabe, thanks so much for having me, man. I definitely look forward to more, you know, more chats with you.
You're damn right. We're going to do it again. Forget what Ashley says.
Forget Ashley.
I never care what she said to begin with. I don't know why I listen to her. I'm kidding. Love you, Ashley. All right, Bender. Great stuff with Howard Bender. John Pollock joins us next. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. It's been a long time since me and John Pollock had sat at the same desk together talking mixed martial arts and boxing. John Pollock, how you doing, John?
It's always the biggest stories that bring me in, Gabe, so I feel honored.
Well, it's a story that I never thought actually was going to happen, to be honest with you. I thought that Floyd Mayweather really would just sort of troll McGregor and Dana and let it draw, you know, let it linger, and then sort of say, I'm not doing this. This is ridiculous. I thought Floyd had more dignity than this, but that was a big mistake to think anybody's going to have dignity when there's $400 or $500 million on the table. So I totally get it. I can't complain about this. People want me to hate the fight. I can't hate it because they're both going to be so rich.
Well, I think that, you know, it's fine if you're not into this fight. I understand that. But I feel that the disappointment or anger, it should be directed at the marketplace. Because if there wasn't a demand for this fight, if people were not going to pay these exorbitant prices for this fight, for tickets, it wouldn't be happening. So I can only lay so much at the promoters that are going in this direction when the public is going to respond.
The public's asking for it. They're giving what they want.
Yeah.
You're exactly right.
This pay-per-view, you can vote. You cannot buy this pay-per-view if you're not interested.
And I will admit, and even as somebody that's covered the UFC so as closely as I have, that I underestimated Conor McGregor's popularity over the years. Like, I really did. I always got that he was big. But I didn't get how big and how many people want to see him fight Floyd Mayweather. Because Floyd Mayweather generally doesn't really have that many fans. The only fans Floyd has are like, you know, hardcore gamblers and mobsters and stuff that never lose money when they bet on him. It's not like he's got a legion, like, you know, the arena. Who's the arena going to be pulling for? The arena's going to be full. You're going to have all the celebrities. You're going to have Will Smith and Drake and all these other jackasses sitting in the good seats. And there's going to be a bunch of drunk Irishmen paying $2,000-$3,000 to sit in the rafters.
Will you be in those rafters?
No. And in fact, I'm avoiding the city that week. I'm not like you. They're not sending me. You know, But no, and to be honest, John, I've got to go to Vegas to enter some football contest around that time of the year. And I'm specifically going to stay away from it because it's going to be a circus and a gouge fest. The hotel's going to be more expensive. They're going to raise the airfare. Everybody's going to have their hands out. And like you said, people are running at them with money saying, take my money.
You know, I didn't even put the timing together that this fight's going to take place a week out from the NFL season starting as well. That, like, the amount of money that's going to get dropped in Vegas, like, you would know this better than me, but that's not a bad seven-day stretch.
John, get this. College football starts a couple hours earlier.
Wow.
That's the first day of college football.
Like, this is going to be a gigantic boon.
NFL preseason games going on that day, actually, as well.
Like, it's going to be an incredible weekend of just money transferring for this. And it's hard to say, like, what the ceiling is for this fight. I know everyone's going to compare it to the Pacquiao numbers, which were astonishing.
4.4 million pay-per-views, reportedly.
Yeah, so when you're talking about that's a number I never thought
somebody
we would see in our lifetimes.
They said, Morenci, it's going to shatter the all-time record. I said, I'd say slow down with this. And in fact, and I could be wrong. I never thought the fight was going to happen. I've been wrong before. But my guesstimation is more 2.5 million.
I think most people have a conservative estimate that this is going to do a gigantic number in maybe the 2.5 to 3 million range. But, I mean, that's what I assume Pacquiao Mayweather would do. When a fight hits, and you and I won't really know until the week of the fight what the public temperature is for this fight, that it's hard to say what the ceiling is. If this really catches fire, if this is carried by the ESPNs who went gaga over this
fight last night.
Yeah,
I believe they will. The question is, too, so pay-per-view, probably going to be in the $99 range. A lot of feedback that I'm getting online is, I'm watching a fight, but there's no way in hell I'm paying $99 for it, or I wouldn't pay $1,500 for a ticket for it.
Yeah, but those are the same criticisms we heard about Mayweather-Pacquiao. This is a different circumstance. It's a different style of fight. This is not the two of the best pound-for-pound boxes of our generation. This is something different. But to me, I think a lot of people at the end, they're going to order this fight. And whether they watch it in a bar or not, I still think it's going to be a very, very gigantic number.
Do you, from a fighting standpoint, put your MMA, your boxing, and your combat sport analyst hat on right now. What's your take? Forget the business and everything. From a fight standpoint, is there an appeal, a disappeal to you? Like, what's your take on that?
I'd be lying if I said there wasn't a curiosity. I think everyone wants to, or at least the majority, they want to see this, but I don't think anyone analyzing this with their head as opposed to their heart can look at this as anything but what it is. Conor McGregor is going into foreign territory, and I don't care if he spends every second in sparring and training himself for this fight. I don't know how you can forecast a win. There's always going to be that probability. I mean, that's going to be the lure of
this fight. In the fight game, there's always that problem. You know, the computer, the numbers, the odds, The actual number is Floyd has a 92% chance of winning the fight.
Yeah, so...
So you got Conor McGregor's got... The computer says he's got an 8%. It's always that puncher's chance.
Everyone is going to look at that Shane Mosley shot that he landed on Floyd Mayweather, and they're going to convince themselves if Floyd can get hit by Conor, that could be it. And that's what they're going to hang their hat on for just that
what if. The line has already come down 20% in 24 hours. And I believe that Conor McGregor, one thing that Conor will do very successfully is sell this fight and troll Floyd Mayweather online and rile up the UFC fan base. And I said this off the top of the show. Conor McGregor fans would bet him against Cain Velasquez and Brock Lesnar in a handicap match. They'd be like, oh, he'd find a way to win. He'd find a way to win somehow. I think they're going to continuously bet him. I think the number is going to come down.
Well, this is also, with Conor McGregor, the unique circumstances is this is a guy that has outlined so many possibilities that people have doubted him for, and then he's come out and done it. And now he gets to cash that in for something really big, where it's not so much he has to win this fight, he just has to sell to people that he has a shot in this fight.
All he has to do is show up,
and it's
dude.
A win.
I was thinking the same thing. Like, if you're Conor McGregor, the whole thing is just get in the ring. You just need to show up and get that check. You're walking away with $100 million. Do you think you'll ever fight in the UFC again?
I hardly think it's just this simple transaction that Dana White believes it will be, where he's back in the cage by the end of the year. I think just from a psychological standpoint, Gabe, if you were suddenly making $1 million a year, and then the following year they say, we want you to do the exact same show, Gabe, but you're going to do it for $1,000. Your workload isn't changing, your preparation isn't changing, but you're going to make less. You've now tasted the top of the combat sports.
So he has no choice to retire. Otherwise, the UFC has to rewrite their entire modus of operation.
You're in a tremendous situation of leverage, where another thing that was laughed at was when Conor beat Eddie Alvarez and said he wanted a percentage of the company. And these are all things that, to me, are on the table for Conor McGregor. He comes back, he has got an enormous bargaining chip here, because both sides, they do need each other, but Conor much less so after you have the stability of cashing
after
in.
Allowed this to happen. It's almost like selling, you know what I mean? You're selling the rights to the company. It's like they just sold out
It's a big question. Does this fight get made a year ago? I don't know if it does. I think that this company they went through a record-setting
year point.
In pay-per-view on 2016.
With an Ari Emanuel and a Hollywood agent mindset, this is the stuff they're looking for, right?
And they've had a rough year on pay-per-view. They're coming off a record-setting year on pay-per-view, and it's been...
Yeah, but this isn't their pay-per-view. This is another thing that amazes me. What are they getting out of this?
Well, they're getting something, and it's obvious that they're getting something.
25, 50 million probably.
Yeah, they've stated it's all confidential what the numbers are, but I mean,
Say there's $400 million on the table. $200 for Floyd, $100 Conor, $50-$70. Because basically, Floyd Mayweather told Conor and the UFC, basically, I don't care what you guys do with the money. You can split this up any way you want, but I'm keeping this much. And obviously, he got his way. It's being promoted by Showtime and Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah, like this is a Showtime production and Mayweather promotions.
It's a boxing card.
That's it. Yeah, it's a
boxing
card. This is a boxing event.
Don't expect to see Diaz on the undercard. That's it.
No, unless he runs into the ring or something from
the
crowd.
Or unless he shows up and wants the winner.
I would not doubt that the Diaz brothers
will. I tweeted yesterday, John. I said, so expect Stipe to start trolling out Anthony Joshua and Tyson Fury. Right on cue.
Oh, this is good.
So when are we going to do this? When are we going to do this?
The floodgates will be open now for boxers and mixed martial artists to be going this way, with Jimmy Manuel wanting the David Haye fight. I mean, this is only going to spur on more of this, and I think it's going to be tougher for Dana White to shut down these demands of fighters that are going to see the coin made here and said, hey, if we can grab 10% of this audience, we're making more money than ever. I think this is a very big precedent that Dana White is making by allowing his top attraction to venture out and do this. And it's going to take us probably a year to see the true effects of what this fight has on the mixed martial arts industry.
From a business ramification as well, I think it's going to take a couple of years to see the direction of the UFC, where they're going. Right now, if you're a fighter in the UFC, you're thinking, they don't even care about me. Like, this is, you know what I mean? Like, what am I even doing?
It's really tough when you watch, the amount of money that will come in one night, but it always comes down to star power. That is your currency in this sport.
This is my problem, though, that if Conor McGregor was the greatest fighter of all time, I'd be like, this is awesome. The guy lost to Diaz 16 months ago. It didn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter, right? I mean, people are going to let him do whatever he wants to do, and I can't get in the way. If they want to see him, they want to see him.
Well, that's one other point is that, you know, a lot will be made about this. Well, how will Connor's drawing ability be impacted by a loss here? And you have to look at in what way does he lose? But to me, you look at history and losses are not the be-all end-all when it comes to drawing power.
Exactly. Did him losing to Diaz affect anything?
Didn't affect him. Never affected Chuck Liddell, Kimbo Slice. Like, these were stars that the audience saw as stars.
Only point of this, when I said super fight, like, to me, you know, John Jones versus a bar, you know, that'd be a super fight. You know, this guy's never lost before. He's freaking awesome. Conor McGregor talked. You know what I mean? Conor McGregor's not the greatest fighter of all time. He's not the greatest mixed martial artist of all time. All right? He's the greatest talker of all time, and he's talked his way into this. What's a prediction on the fight? What do you think happens? Mayweather decision? Stoppage? McGregor upset?
Not a McGregor upset. I mean, I feel it's a pretty solid win for Floyd Mayweather Jr. The fact is, I think that a decision would be the best case scenario for Conor McGregor. And I feel that probably does get stopped within the 12 rounds. And if he makes it to a decision, that's a moral victory for Conor McGregor if he can go 36 minutes with Floyd Mayweather.
Joey Odessa hasn't posted a total yet. I think the fight will end exactly whenever the total is because people are going to be looking for side deals and how to make money off of this behind the scenes. But my initial reaction and my initial prediction right now, Floyd Mayweather knockout, late first round, early second round.
Wow. Well, there you have it.
All right. We'll come back with my New England Patriots prediction. Check out John Pollock on the Fight Network. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci, and it's time to begin to break down the 2017 National Football League season. We've been waiting. We waited for the NBA Finals to come to a conclusion. We waited for the Stanley Cup to come to a conclusion to start talking football. Listen, we do 5 shows a week on the television side of things. There's 20 shows a month. It's 32 teams in a National Football League. This is essentially going to take us about a month and a half if we start right now breaking down each and every National Football League team. Now, for obvious reasons, we're not locking in any of these selections. This is basically we're giving you something to chew on over the summer to think about, and then we'll lock down our final best bets, of course, as the season approaches. Now, football, more than any other sport, football and fighting are the two things you don't want to bet on in advance, all right? Fighters miss weight. Fighters fail drug tests. Football players sometimes miss weight, if you're Eddie Lacy. Football players fail drug tests. Football players hit women. Football players get suspended, all right? So there's a lot of freaking things that can happen between now and the start of the football season. But the season's around the corner right now, and this is getting real. And I think it's time that we start looking at some of the futures, some of the numbers, some of the odds, some of the rosters, and some of the moves. So let's start off with the AFC East. The way we're going to operate with our season preview here, we're going to go into predictive order of how I think the division's going to finish. So if we're starting off with the AFC East, and we're starting off with the order that I think they're going to finish, and we're going to start off with first place, then it's pretty obvious what team we're talking about, the Buffalo Bills. It's the Buffalo Bills' year. All right, now that Rex Ryan's gone, Sean McDermott's going to come in here. The Buffalo Bills are going to go 13-3 and shock the world. No, they are not. The New England Patriots. All right, let's start out. We'll get to the Bills later. I got the Bills finishing in third place, all right? New England Patriots, defending Super Bowl champions. What are their odds to win the Super Bowl again? They're plus 450. To win again. Nobody's won back-to-back Super Bowls, ironically enough, since the New England Patriots in 2004 and 5 when they beat the Panthers and the Eagles. I'm not so sure that the New England Patriots are going to win the Super Bowl. All right? I'm not going to sit here and tell, oh, yeah, they're a lock to win the Super Bowl. But if you look at the AFC and the picture in the AFC, is rebuilding right now. Everybody's all high on the Raiders, but come on. let's not get carried away here and say, well, the Raiders are about to displace and dislodge. Oh, the Patriots is the beast of the East. The Denver Broncos got their quarterback situations. Big Ben Roethlisberger's a hit away from retirement all the time. Mike Tomlin's an idiot. I don't have any faith in the Pittsburgh Steelers anymore. So when I look at this, plus 275 to win the AFC, that's not crazy talk. Anything can happen in the Super Bowl, but I think the Patriots are the team to beat in the AFC, and I don't even think plus 275 is that bad of a bet. Their season win total is 12.5. Ugh. I was really hoping for an even 12. I was hoping for an 11.5, but they're not in the business of giving money away. So it's 12.5 right now, minus 130 to the over. So the question is, will the New England Patriots be 13-3 for us to win this wager? The Patriots have won an NFL record 8 straight division titles. They've won 13 of the last 14 division titles. They've won 12 or more games 7 straight years. This team has no holes. As good as the offense is and as much hype as Tom Brady gets, the defense is actually better. They were ranked 3rd against the run and 12th against the pass last year. Think about that. They were ranked 12th against the pass, and they were always leading in football games. And teams were playing from behind. They brought in Gilmore. To add to this defense, everyone, they're going to give up on Butler. They didn't give up on Butler. They got Butler and Gilmore. They got a bunch of hybrid players that are modern NFL football players. And you want to talk about, every year they always have like an exodus of players on the defensive side of the football. That's because they know that they have players that are ready to step up. And keep your eye on Trey Flowers this year, guys. Last year, 7.5 sacks. I think this kid's getting into double-digit sacks, this year. No joke. He's going to get a double-digit sacks. He's going to be a madman out there. He's going to take that next step up and be one of the leaders on the defensive side of the football. They bring in Stephon Gilmore from the Buffalo Bills at $14 million a year to shore up a secondary that they thought could be a little bit better. Now, the offense, they put up 28.7 points per game last year, and they didn't have Tom Brady for the first four games. They didn't have Rob Gronkowski. So what can you say? Oh, yeah, so they lose LeGarrette Blount. All right, LeGarrette Blount had 18 touchdowns. LeGarrette Blount only averaged 3.9 yards per carry. They bring in Mike Gillisley. He averages 5.7 yards per carry. I wonder if Gillisley can catch the ball out of the backfield, but Gillisley's going to provide them a nice spark at the running back position. They bring in Dwayne Allen to go along with Rob Gronkowski's return. And we're talking about a freaking very, very, very dangerous football team here. Now, let's look at their schedule. They play a lot of high-profile football games in New England Patriots, do. The season opener against the Kansas City Chiefs on a Thursday night. They're playing in Mexico against the Raiders, at Denver, etc. But they're only playing against 6 teams that were in the playoffs last year. And if you actually look at their schedule, it's manageable. Kansas City, they're going to win that game. They're going to beat the Saints. I respect the Texans, but let's say it's Deshaun Watson's, third game of his life. He's not winning at Foxborough. Carolina is a train wreck. They're not winning at Foxborough. We're going to lead us into week 5 at Tampa. I expect that the New England Patriots are going to be undefeated. That game's a Thursday nighter against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Now, the schedule does get a little tricky here. The toughest game of the year is week 7. They're hosting the Falcons, but the game is in Foxborough. Now, week 11, they're in Mexico City against the Raiders, and the week before that, in week 10, they're playing against the Broncos. So, so they got that bye week there, and then at the Broncos, they're at Mexico. There could be a little bit of a stumble at some point with this football team, but I got to tell you what, I'm having a hard time seeing 4 games that they're going to lose. I mean, they play against the Buffalo Bills, the Miami Dolphins, and the New York Jets 6 times. That's 6-0. Let's get risky and say what? 5-1? Really? Who's beating them? The Dolphins? So let's say 5-1. Let's say 6-0. That's 6 games right there. That's 6 games. So essentially, they got to go 7-3 against the rest of the league. They might stumble. They could lose that game in Mexico to the Raiders. They could lose that game. Maybe the Falcons go in there and beat them in Foxborough. Tampa, on a Thursday night? I'm not buying it. Like I said, it's 12.5, and I rarely ever play a regular season win total that's going to be this high, because you really need a clean ride here. But essentially, you know, are the Patriots going to lose one game a month? I don't think so. I think they're going to get out of the gate. They're going to be 5-0 going into Tampa. And ultimately, I think the New England Patriots are going to be like a 14-2 football team this year. And we should note, it's actually the 10th anniversary of their 16-0 regular season. Now, you look at the Golden State Warriors and their success, and you look at franchises like this, and they don't get complacent. You know, the New England Patriots are defending Super Bowl champions, and what do? They bring in Dwayne Allen. They bring in a Mike Gillisley. They bring in a Stephon Gilmore. You know, they don't get complacent. Tom Brady only has a couple of years left. Brady's not going to, ruin our lives forever, guys, all right? You know, I think Brady has another 2 years left of playing at a high level this year and the following year. And I think after that, reality and Father Time will start to catch up to him. But this year, as much as it pains me, and I'm no New England Patriot fan, but I really don't see anybody in the AFC getting in the New England Patriots way. I wouldn't be shocked if they did go on a run and a potential undefeated season, but I think ultimately they're going to be 14-2, 13-3 at worst. So right now we suggest to take the over 12.5. It's -130 right now. Maybe even can find a book at 12. I would jump on that. I do think it's a good bet to win +275, man, to win the AFC. They're going to have home field. So essentially, you have the Patriots on their home field at +275 to win two games. I'm telling you what, they ain't going to be +275 underdogs in any of those football games in the playoffs. You know, give me a +300, I pull the trigger. Give me a 12, I really pull the trigger. But I think the Patriots win no less than 13 football games this year. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. And Brandon Cooks, our plays of the day. Just did a Patriot preview, and I even forgot you have Brandon Cooks. Thanks, Reed. Tigers, -145 against the Rays. Verlander on the hill. Like it. Matt Moore's a freaking gas can, all right? Matt Moore shouldn't be allowed to be around a lighter or matches because he's combustible. All right, the dude blows it home. He's even worse on the road. All right, the guy gets killed on the road. And finally, in closing, don't look now, man, but the Kansas City Royals have won four ball games in a row. Nolasco hasn't won in nine starts. He's lost five straight decisions. Give me a Royale with cheese tonight at +105. Other than that, you're on your own. May the winners be yours.